Up next, a coast-to-coast favorite, Lauren Coleman. One of his recent works, True Giants, is Gigantopithecus, still alive. Lauren is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Lauren Coleman, constant researcher, and introduces us to the fascinating world of cryptozoology, the study of hidden animals that is truly gaining popularity. Lauren is one of the world's leading cryptozoologists and backs up his assertions with hundreds of years worth of source material, plus extensive field work on the subject. Here he is, back on Coast to Coast. Lauren, my friend, how are you?
Great, George. It's good to be here. I was afraid you were saying I was hundreds of years old, so I'm glad we got over that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we threw in the source for material. But you know what? You've been around on this planet long enough to know so many creatures that are probably hundreds of years old, aren't they?
Oh, I think we've got some old creatures around, yes, and I've been doing this. I just celebrated my 51st year of being involved in cryptozoology, so I guess that does give me some kind of legacy.
Absolutely. What's new with you, Lauren, since we last talked?
Well, you know, I've been pretty busy, been traveling a lot, California, Point Pleasant, West Virginia last weekend to do a little Mothman update, but some of this Bigfoot stuff is getting kind of crazy out there.
Oh, it really is. What do you think of that little video of that North Carolina case?
Oh, well, the Shelby, North Carolina case is really kind of remarkably laughable. I mean, the guy looks like he's catching the bottom of his costume on his feet. You know, he's shuffling across. This was taken March 22nd in Rutherford County, North Carolina. The guy says he was out there with his video camera and Mr. Tom Byers. And I'm not sure if he was fooled or he's trying to make a fool of us, but it certainly looks like the person in the suit even stops to wave at the camera. So it's quite funny at one level. But on another level, it's really sad that these YouTube videos are getting so much attention. It's really kind of undermines all of the serious research, of course.
It really does. It's almost like the boy who cried wolf, Lauren. So one day we're going to get some great material, and people may say, it's another hoax.
Yeah, well, I think that happens already. You get good sightings, or, you know, there's the whole possibility about this footage everybody's talking about, and they've been talking about for 3 years from Kentucky. Supposedly, it's being analyzed, and the trailer's already out about various scientists, like, you know, our good friend Jeff Meldrum. Is in the film and all of that, but until we actually get a body, whether it's hit by a lumber truck or accidentally killed by a hunter or whatever, until we actually get a body or a live capture, people are just going to laugh at these videos.
Have you heard anything, inside information, that somebody has a Bigfoot captured any place? Does that ever come up?
Oh, it comes up all the time. It really does. Of course, we sometimes see it have ridiculous endings like the Georgia hoax 2 years ago. But the whole little buzz that's going behind the scenes right now is whether or not some of these DNA samples from this Kentucky case, are they already contaminated with human beings? Because that's one of the problems that always occurs with DNA samples. Is in actually collecting it, are you then ruining the sample? And one of the things that's already coming out about that, that's sort of leaking out, that somebody's going to be coming out with some new findings saying the DNA sample from this Bigfoot is human-like, and that's going to change the whole field. But the thing that I have to stop and say, wait a second, if it's contaminated with human DNA, then naturally you're going to get results back that will really intermix whatever Bigfoot DNA was there with human. And so that could be a confusing picture of what we think the appearance of this creature's like.
You know, Lauren, since you've been investigating the search for Bigfoot and other researchers as well, we continue to get great stories. You know, you just mentioned the hoaxers, the frauds, you know, buying great costumes and things like that. Are we ever going to bust out of that and really get a creature and be able to check him out?
Well, I think so. I think that one of the things that we see in the whole evolution of the discovery of new species is, of course, during the 19th century, the Bigfoot of Africa was the gorilla. And now we don't even think about it twice. You know, the mountain gorilla exists, giant panda, coelacanth, all of those are really the past stories in which we don't think about them, how unknown they were and how mysterious it was. And so it's almost as if this critical human psychological threshold is crossed when we discover it. So yes, I think we'll discover a new animal that is, like the Range Pindek of Sumatra or the Bigfoot Sasquatch of America or even Yeti. Those kinds of things will happen in the next 25 years. And for maybe 6 days, it'll be remarkable. And then everybody will say, oh, of course we figured something was there. And then we'll go on to the next big, celebrity cryptid, as I call them.
You just finished a new book. I mentioned the title with researcher Mark Hall on true giants. Tell me about that.
Well, true giants is really a radical approach even in the Bigfoot field. Of course, I always want to keep at the cutting edge. So true giants looks at these reports that have kind of been at the back of some of the file folders of researchers. They've kind of known they're there, but they don't want to talk about them. They're almost embarrassed by them. And it's reports of Bigfoot-like creatures that are bigger than the 8 feet that we usually get. The Bigfoot range is really about 6.5 feet to 8 feet tall. But there's always been these reports, from Asia, from North America, like a very classic report from Pitt Lake, British Columbia in the 60s of a creature that was 15 to 20 feet tall. So there's this really very common description of creatures that are upwards of 15, 20 feet tall. They leave four-toed footprints, and that's a real indicator. And they're also a little bit thinner than usual Bigfoot. Bigfoot tends to have rather large muscles, and if it's a female, the wide hips and all of that, and the mammillary glands so that you can see that they're nursing mothers and stuff like that. But these true giants, it's almost as if Mark and I talking this over and really wanting to write the book, humans have this almost survival ancestral memory of giants, and we've nicely put it at the back of our minds. We defeated the giants maybe, thousands of years ago. Giants were all in the earth. And that's, obviously a common expression from the Bible and all of that. But just looking at it as a sort of species tradition that we have in our memory, and then we want to bring this up and we want to say, look, it looks like there's still surviving areas in some wilderness areas in Asia and maybe the Pacific Northwest where these creatures are huge. They're, relatively peaceful, but they have this violent a part of them in which there's been this battle between giants and humans for a long, long time. The giants really had us running for a long while, and we, of course, defeated them. That's why you have ancestral memory stories like Jack the Giant Killer that became Jack and the Beanstalk. And those are really there to tell us we can defeat the giants. We don't need to be afraid of them, but also to not forget them. And that's what the book really wants to look at, the true evidence of creatures that are still cryptids, still part of cryptozoology. But even Bigfoot researchers want to ignore these stories, and we don't think it's not the time to ignore these stories anymore. So it's a kind of a very exciting story, and really on the edge of maybe even more new discoveries in that area.
You just mentioned something about Mothman, that you've been doing some work in that arena. What's going on there?
Well, what, of course, happens is people never forget Mothman. Mothman, just for those people that haven't heard about it, of course, and I can't imagine anybody listening to the show wouldn't, but in 1966 to 67, there were over 200 accounts of this giant, over 6 feet tall, a creature called Mothman with big wings and red eyes, and seen in the Point Pleasant, West Virginia area. Well, there's been some new documentaries coming out, and one of the most bizarre things is one of these new documentaries called Eyes of the Mothman was filmed for several years. Then the director got sick. could not get out of bed for essentially a couple of years. One of the cameramen was charged with stalking Trump's daughter, you know, Donald Trump's daughter.
Yeah.
And he appeared on a videotape this week after his bail was revoked, in which he says that he blames the Mothman movies and the Mothman for causing him to be the stalker.
Oh.
And this goes into some of the research that I did, that there seems to almost be a Mothman curse. You remember the days whenever the Mothman movie came out in 2002. There were lots of automobile accidents around Point Pleasant, lots of people dying. And there does seem to be this bad luck connected to Mothman. So we'll just kind of stay away from that topic a little bit. But there are still sightings of Mothman, and that's what the important thing is. Mothman, of course, was a word that was invented by a copy editor in Ohio who was a fan of the Batman series on TV, and he wanted to come up with a shorter name for the headline. The witnesses at the time were really calling it a big bird. And if we think about it cryptozoologically, there are lots of big bird sightings. They're called thunderbirds.
That's right.
And they're in different parts of the country, Pennsylvania, the Ozarks, Alaska. Not much different than Mothman.
You know, and I was just going to ask you about these big birds. Do we get any sightings of prehistoric birds, the pterodactyls?
Sure, we do. We get sightings. Some of the best pterodactyl sightings is the Congo Mato, which is in Africa. The other reports, like I investigated and went down to the Yucatan in the 80s to investigate reports that people were filming pterodactyls. And what they turned out to be was fricket birds. And so some of, you know, you can imagine albatross and fricket birds looking far away in the sky have that kind of sharpness to their wings so that people would actually say that they're seeing pterodactyls. It's going to be very hard for pterodactyls to survive because, of course, they're from 65 million years ago. So it's the explanation that they're actually something more mundane and common does happen.
Lauren, what was that incredible story we used to talk about a bird that came down and picked up a little boy and the mother ran out with a broom and swatted it and it dropped
the little kid?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was the Lawndale, Illinois case of 1977 in Illinois, where this boy, Marlo Lowe, was running around his front yard. He had one of those shirts, those tank tops. And two of these birds swooped down into the yard and actually caught him by the straps and carried him about 15 feet in his yard. All of the people from the Lowell's house came outside. There was about seven of them in a semicircle and started yelling and doing everything like you were talking about, and the boy got dropped. But it turned his hair gray. The family was harassed by kids from school who left dead birds on the boy's porch and different things like that. It's not easy sometimes to be a witness to some of these creatures because, of course, you can lose your jobs, you can lose your wife, you can also lose your hair because it becomes such a psychologically impactful experience and a trauma that people really don't leave you alone about it.
No, not at all. Well, it's a field, Lauren, I think it's one of the best. People are fascinated with cryptozoology, and
it's becoming very popular. That's right.
Absolutely. Now, tell me about the Sasquatch Summit that Daniel Perez was telling us about.
Oh, you mean the secret meeting of the Sasquatch Summit? No, I'm just kidding.
What's going on?
Well, in British Columbia, in Harrison Hot Springs, the second weekend of April, there's a gathering of probably 100, 150 of some of the top names in the world from Russia, from Canada, from, United States. We're all getting together to kind of put our heads together about this whole Bigfoot field. It started out as a tribute to John Green. John Green, of course, is the elder statesman of Sasquatch chronologies. He's written a lot of books in the 60s and 70s. John Green is 84 years old, and a lot of people decided, you know, why why should we wait for his funeral? Let's celebrate with him while he's alive. So it was a John Green tribute that now has turned into a Sasquatch summit. And it's very exciting. There's not too many places where people left as far as tickets and stuff, but I'm hearing about some of the people that are coming there. It's quite a blue ribbon list. So a few of us, myself, Meldrum, and others, are going to give tributes to John Green, as well as talk about his legacy. John Green, I knew him since about 1962, when I saw his name in Ivan T. Sanderson's book about the abominable snowman. And in that book, he talked about the Bigfoot and John Green. And Green actually started corresponding to me when I was just a young whippersnapper. And he said, I was the youthful age of his son, so he was going to talk to me. And he mentored me in many ways. And he said, there's not enough people looking into the Native American legends of Bigfoot and Sasquatch. So Mark Hall and I, who just wrote the book True Giant, we haven't really been working together. We've been working separate. But one of the first things we ever did together in 1969 was write a paper together on all the Bigfoot legends that turn up in Indian and Native American and First People tales, which is a good way to see that these kinds of traditions and folklore have been around for a long time and have a real history beyond the white people, of course.
What's going on with this report of a dog being born to a sheep in China? Come on, what is this?
Yeah, I know. I was called by reporters yesterday, and I said to them, just start looking at the report. Well, this report says that a little woolly dog, and you can see some of the pictures online, different places, and it's a little puppy. A sheep herder comes across this dog. He said that was being licked by a sheep that had just given birth to it. But there's absolutely no eyewitness testimony saying that the dog actually was birthed by the sheep. It's just that one kind of association thing. You have a little young newborn puppy being seen close to a sheep that's just given birth to other sheep, and you're going to have that maternal instinct certainly show up there, but it's almost as if there's different versions of the World Weekly News in China or something, because they seem to be getting bored and they're really promoting this story in the last couple of days. So I think it's going to be that kind of one that's going to become viral. And so I just thought we should at least try to head it off at the pass there, George.
Lots of bizarre things going on this planet, Lauren, no doubt.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
We're going to take some phone calls with you when we come back. Now, the book, the brand new one, True Giants, is it out? How can people get it?
Oh, it's online all over. It's an Anomalous Books published book. It came out December 1st, so it's quite available now, and it's actually been doing fairly well for a book that's, of course, not getting much attention because people are kind of scared of the radical theories in it.
All right, Lauren, you stay with us. We'll come back. We'll take phone calls next with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Clint Marsh joins us. He's an expert in psychic powers and mentalism. Should be a fascinating program right here on Coast to Coast AM. Lauren, what's going on with the world's only cryptozoology museum?
Well, we've been very successful. Thousands and thousands of people have come through. And so in the next couple months, I'm going to be – actually, I might as well just use your show as a way to announce it. We're going to expand. We're going to go from 500 square feet plus to maybe 2,500 square feet. I'm going to move the museum a couple stores down. We're looking for a new storefront, and we're going to expand because we're so successful. We need to spread out the – exhibits, make more interpretive panels, get some new exhibits, and really keep on going. This is an evolutionary process, and we're really happy that people are accepting us with such open arms. We're getting visitors from Sydney, Australia, and Tibet, and all over the world to come to Little Portland, Maine to see our museum.
Super. Let's go to the phones now. Andy in the state of Washington, you're up with Lauren Coleman. Go ahead, Andy.
Well, good morning. I got a Bigfoot story for you. One time my grandson, who was 9, and a friend of mine that worked for me, we were dirt bike riding in Skamania County, Washington. And my friend, he kind of took off and went up this hill, and we came up behind him, and we got up to the top of the hill. The motorcycle was laying on its side, and the wheel was just a spinning, and there was a cliff there. And I went over there, and he dove off the motorcycle, and his helmet came off, and he cracked his head open, and his arm was badly damaged. And I was standing there, and I was taking my coat off to put over him, and I seen something out of the corner of my eye, and I thought at first it might have been a bear standing up because it was getting bigger and bigger. And I looked over there, and my grandson, he showed up at that time and took his helmet off, and we're standing there looking at it, and I go, what in the heck is that? And I looked at it, and it was the first day of elk season, and I thought it might be a hunter. And I just kind of zoomed in on it, and it was walking, and it just I thought I'd see a backpack or a gun, but it was just black. I mean, it was so black, like it was carved out of existence or something. And I told my grandson, I started jumping up and down. I told him, I said, you remember this day for the rest of your life, because this is the day you saw a Bigfoot. And my mechanic, he lifted his head up, and he looked over, and he was hurt pretty bad. And he just kind of moaned and groaned, and he laid back. And we ended up getting him out of there. Anyway, I came back a couple days later with another friend of mine, and we were on a cliff, and there was a creek down at the bottom of the cliff, and it was kind of like a roller coaster hill from there on out. And I had my friend go down to where we saw this Bigfoot, and I gave him a single, and I had him walk and everything. We had a rangefinder, and it took him about 3 minutes to walk the distance that it took this thing to walk. Oh, I don't know how many seconds it was, because I was kind of shook up when I saw it. And anyway, it turned out it was 450 yards, and it was quite an interesting thing, since I lived in this area forever and I heard all these stories. And
it sounds like a great case. And actually, I mean, I hope your mechanic friend is okay. But about that county, of course, in 1969 is the first one in the United States to actually pass an ordinance to protect the Bigfoot. It's illegal for several years, it was illegal to shoot Bigfoot in that county. So it's an interesting place to have the sighting.
What would you do, Lauren, if you came face to face with a Bigfoot?
Well, I'd always say I'd interview it, of course. No, I'd want to make sure that I think one thing that I've done in interviewing so many people that have had sightings like this, they are so much in shock, they forget to take a good picture. And that's a basic first thing you need to do is take a picture, figure out where that creature was, see if there's any tracks or signs. People always look for tracks, but they forget to look around the bushes and see if there's any hair on the bushes. So I do different things like that. Forensically involve myself in the area of the sightings, but I'd also want to have, if I was by myself and there was other people around, I'd want to get them to look in that same direction, because I'd want to make it a multiple witness sighting. One of the worst things that happen is people have a sighting and they're all by themselves and they forget to take any kind of evidence, and it's really their word against the world, and it just doesn't usually work out in their favor.
Leslie Patterson called us last hour, a relative of Roger Patterson.
Oh, yeah.
And you're convinced that that film is authentic, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm 98% have to accept the possibility that that's a very real film. We need to be open-minded about it. I mean, there's muscle movement you can see in the new enhanced film, where we have the stabilization and the enhancements because of computers. There's a female creature in there in which you can see muscle movement. Even if you look at that very famous picture from that one frame from the Patterson film, you can actually, if you look at it carefully, you can see that the calf muscle on this female creature is tight. And if that was actually a costume, it would look like your jeans. And I have a definition that's straight up and down. So I think there's something going on. I don't think it's a man in a suit and all of that stuff that you always hear. Those claims have actually fallen by the wayside. And they're as empty as some of the other claims that we've heard about Bigfoot in the past.
Okay, next up, let's go to Bonnie in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Bonnie, thanks for calling.
Thank you, George.
Sure.
Hi there.
I finally got to talk to you.
Great.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, I have a long history of being interested in both Bigfoot and UFOs, but it wasn't until just recently, about 15 years ago, that I began to think there's a connection between UFOs and Bigfoot. And I'd be really interested to hear what anybody has to say about that. I did my investigations in Great Falls, Montana, where they're having Bigfoot and UFOs all at the same time. And the Sioux, Standing Rock Sioux Indian Reservation in South Dakota, they had many sightings, and I drove down there and came down for four different weekends and interviewed people, mostly of the American Indian. I didn't see any Bigfoot creatures, but I heard a sound that sounded like the one you played at the beginning of your show tonight.
Right.
And it was pretty gruesome.
Sure.
Well, this tie-in, Bonnie, tell me about the UFOs and Bigfoot. Do you think it could be extraterrestrial in origin?
Yes, I do. I think it's the only explanation. And I don't think that people going out with guns and everything ever get a body as such.
A lot of people believe that, Lauren.
Yeah, I know they do. And I've written about it. I've been, some of my best friends are ufologists, and all of that. And actually, George, I've noticed you didn't ask me about any anal probes on Bigfoot this time.
So
that's kind of new for you. So, but seriously, I very much respect that people have different opinions, and some people do think that ETs are involved with UFOs. For me, it's always been a case of why use one unknown to explain another unknown. And I really see them. What occurs psychologically, I think, is that once somebody gets interested and involved in one area that's alternative or paranormal, they naturally open their mind to accepting the possibility for other things. And that's quite good because it does allow you to really try to think about other things. But it does not help me zoologically explain Bigfoot. And I just really see it as a common high strangeness phenomena that occurs in some areas, where a reporter who's starting to get Bigfoot reports starts to get UFO reports, starts to get cattle mutilation reports, puts them all together in the story, and then people think that they're all interrelated. I think it has much more to do with what John Keogh called the reflective factor, where you start getting all of these kinds of strange reports at the same time, because human nature is to either exclude them totally or to open your mind. And that's what I think is happening, for instance, in Standing Rock, South Dakota, where they're getting very many strange sightings there.
Okay, let's go now to Bill in Corning, California. Hey, Bill, thanks for calling.
Yes, hi, guys. The previous caller touched upon something I was going to touch upon, and I think there is empirical evidence that there's a linchpin between the UFO sightings and the Bigfoot creatures, because what we have is a very overwhelming stench that tends to smell like sulfur during sightings of Bigfoot. We also have that same kind of sulfuric smell with many UFO cases. And so I'm really with that lady that called, that there just might be that link. At least we have something empirical to look at to say this is a connecting force between the two phenomena. And I sort of had a thought that, who knows, these guys might be their pets or test animals down here to do their own particular readings. And we also freak out when we see these things, but I often wonder, what do they think when they see us? Are they good candidates for hair club for men? I mean, these are very odd creatures, and I don't know what to make of it either, and I'll just go ahead and take my comments off the air.
Do other civilizations, Lorne, do they talk about Bigfoot like Native Americans, past civilizations?
Oh, yeah, of course. In a lot of different cultural groups. I mean, there's over 400 and some Native American, Native Canadian, Native Alaskan groups. And in certain ones of them, you have bear men, you have spirit men that are live in a spirit world, or some even actually talk about them in relationship to creatures from outer space and all of that, just like you hear this in our American culture. But most Native American and Native North American groups really talk about these as part of the animal world and really look at them very specifically as animals that they have to relate to, just like elk and moose and salmon, and so you get that going on too. I just want to bring up, we have to be careful about associating UFOs and Bigfoot and different things like that with one or two characteristics, because I've also heard people come along and say, you know, Bigfoot smells like sulfur. Well, also the devil smells like, you know, brimstone and sulfur smell. So we have to be careful associating one or two factors, because then you get other people coming in saying the devil or demons or right. elementals, and it really does get to be very polluted in some ways, your data.
Have any huts been found out there in the forest or in the jungles that could be attributed to Bigfoot?
As far as living areas, of course, there's always people that are saying that they're finding different trees and bushes made into living spaces. This seems to happen a lot in Ohio, and tree twists have been found. But it is intriguing, because if this is a creature that seems to be big and very gorilla-like, there actually haven't been that many beds found. Although you do hear native reports of beds put together with evergreen trees and different things like that, but we haven't really found them. Whereas over in the Himalaya, with the Yeti reports, we've actually had some sightings and photographs of some beds of Yeti in caves and different places like that.
All right, we go now to Mike in Ocean Beach, California. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Hello, George. Hello, Lauren. Thank you.
Hello.
I'll try to make this quick. I'm a photographer for a very well-known stockhouse. You see their name everywhere, and I've been on the road now almost 5 years. I'm in Ocean Beach now because I didn't want to go out into the weather. But two summers ago, this was July, I was passing from Bangor, Maine. It was not at night. It was not quite dusk. And I had stopped in a CVS, and the woman there told me, be careful of the moose. You can't see them. They're tall, and all you see is their legs. So I'd slow down. And I was traveling from Bangor to through the White Mountains. And I had my windows down, and it was still pretty bright, and I went around a turn, and off to my right, I saw this animal. It was squatting just maybe 6 or 8, 10 feet off the road, and it was a tall, I'd say, it's hard to tell, certainly at least 6 feet, and it had a it was a long body, but the body itself was narrower than a bear. It had actually a figure, you know, and there was long hair on it, but it was not a lot on the body. I could see the body itself, and as I looked at it, it looked at me. It was squatting there, and it looked at me, I'm trying to figure out what the face actually looked like. It was flatter, and the eyes were kind of, I wouldn't say very large, but they were, my impression was that they were larger. And it sort of looked at me, it was almost like a man looking at me. It was absolutely an animal. And it was like that, my impression was that it was tall from the hips up. Tall, I could be wrong. It looked like it was taller from the hips, and there was a shape to the midsection, you know. So anyway, that is what I saw. I've been on the road a long time. I've seen, like, I think I had 5 UFO sightings, et cetera. I would like to make one more quick comment, okay?
Sure. Zachariah, go ahead.
Yeah, in Zacharias in the Bible 5:5, Zacharias says he was talking to an angel when like a cylinder flew across the sky, and he said, "What's that?" to the angel. You can see it, I'm paraphrasing. And the angel said, "This is the curse of the earth." And I always wonder if all these things are elementals of some kind. Anyway, that's my story. I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Okay, thanks, Michael. Yeah, Lauren, go ahead.
He was a photographer, even though it's at night. I was just trying to. I very much would like to follow up on a report like that. Of course, I am in Maine, and so I'd like to figure out where this was and if there's other sightings, because I'm actually doing a statistical study on the sightings in the state of Maine. That's a good sighting. It's just, whenever we start mixing in our own theories, then we kind of lose track of what we might have seen. So I'd like to get back to his specific data and investigate that.
All right, Lauren, truck drivers, too, they must see all kinds of things out there, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I really think the salt of the earth, truck drivers, cab drivers, police officers, tribal police, I hear from them all the time. They're the long haulers, some really good Black Panther sightings in Arkansas and Nevada and different places like that. They don't see the Bigfoot so much. The Bigfoot are pretty smart. They stay away from the roads. They don't get hit. They don't really. They hear about the sightings of Bigfoot crossing the smaller roads. But the Black Panthers and things like that, which aren't really too smart, are the ones that I'm hearing from truck drivers that are crossing some of the bigger roads.
All right. Very good. Lauren, thank you so much for being on the program.
Oh,
I really appreciate it.
Great to be here, George. It's nice to talk to you again.
His new, his new book, True Giants, is Gigantopithecus, Still Alive. And, of course, he's written books called Monsters of New Jersey and The Copycat Effect as well. His websites, two of them, CryptoMundo.com and LawrenceColeman.com, are all linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasour, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.